Again, welcome to you all. Nice to have you for our celebration of Mahashivaratri. It's nice to reflect on this occasion, some of the significance, meaning, and symbolism associated with Lord Shiva. Too often we very casually refer to Lord Shiva as God of destruction, and that gives Lord Shiva kind of a bad rap, wouldn't you agree? Would you want to know as a person of destruction? So Lord Shiva is known as God of destruction. Of course, the proper Sanskrit is Upasamharakarta, which doesn't mean destruction. It means the one who brings about dissolution of the universe at the end of time. But if you want to reduce that to one word, what word do you end up using? Destruction. It's okay. But we should understand a little bit more deeply that Lord Shiva, here's a perspective we haven't discussed before. Lord Shiva can properly be understood as the God of rebirth and renewal. You may not have heard that before. It's kind of a different perspective, but we're going to substantiate it very clearly. Well, Santi, I don't seem to have my glasses. Sorry to make you run around for me. Where are they? Oh, how about that? Very clever. Why? Because I forget. All right. Good. Thank you. I may need to look at my notes from time to time. So how is it that we can understand Lord Shiva to be the God of, it says right here, rebirth, now I can read, it's rebirth and renewal. You know, that there's something about Lord Shiva that symbolizes rebirth and renewal. What is it about the depiction of Lord Shiva that indicates rebirth and renewal? Anyone can pick it out. Behind our linga is that snake, sarpa, that serpent. And the snake is a symbol of rebirth and renewal. We're going to discuss that. By the way, we have this nice friend here. How is this? Now, looks good. Now, it's very interesting that in Hindu tradition, snakes are revered. This? I mean, not very cuddly looking, kind of frightening looking. And beside the fact, you know this, that in village India, every year, many people die of snake bite. It continues to be a real threat to people. So if snakes are dangerous, if snakes look kind of frightening, then how do they become revered in Hindu culture? Interesting, for very good reason. Snakes are one of the very few critters that shed their skin, right? When they shed their skin, they are symbolically reborn. This is a process of renewal, a process of transformation, a process of rebirth. Snakes come to symbolize the rebirth of the human soul, which we understand as one of Ishvara's blessings. The end of this life is not the end of you. It's followed by rebirth. So the snake then is revered as a symbol of rebirth, as a symbol of renewal, and then comes to be associated with Lord Shiva. Why? Why Lord Shiva? Why not Lord Vishnu? Why not Lord Ganesha? But specific Lord Shiva. There's even a way of explaining that. It happens that snakes are frequently seen at cremation grounds. The reason snakes are frequently seen at cremation grounds is snakes don't like to hang around with people. people don't like to hang around in cremation grounds. So cremation grounds are generally desolate. You know, the cremations don't, in mostly the cremations go on very irregularly, once in a week or something. So cremation grounds then are desolate without any people. So therefore, it's a safe place for the snakes to congregate, very quiet. Lord Shiva also likes very quiet places for the sake of meditation. Many mythological stories describe Lord Shiva in cremation grounds or quiet places meditating. And one can imagine that when Lord Shiva was in a cremation ground meditating, that he must have befriended those snakes. And apparently one of those snakes happened to find its way around Lord Shiva's neck. Oh, we try that? How's this? There we go. How silly is that? All right. I'm not Lord Shiva, obviously. Okay. But that's how the snakes are depicted. Okay, enough of this silliness. Now let's look at some of the symbolism. Now, and Jim will... We're working on a video, and Jim will move the camera. All right. So Lord Shiva, as God of destruction, there's a very important connection between destruction and renewal. So, and that connection may not be too obvious. The point is that renewal begins with destruction. And a good example of that is when they do road repairs. What is the first thing they do? They destroy the road. A nice memory, many years ago, Vasanti would drive me all over the place to programs, and frequently I had programs in Pennsylvania, and we would drive frequently down this Pennsylvania Route 202, if any of you know that highway. And every time we drove down that highway, it was under construction, which means it was all ripped up. So one week, one part would be ripped up. Then another week, another part would be ripped up. And every time, a different part of the highway was ripped up. It didn't look like road construction. It looked like road destruction is what it looked like every week. Of course, if you go driving down there today, it's excellent. You know, it's really very nicely done. But you get the idea that in the process of renewing those highways, improving those highways, that step one is to rip them up, showing how a process of rebirth and renewal is preceded by destruction. Rebirth is preceded by death. This is a symbolism. Loss, and here's a general principle in life. Very frequently, loss is followed by some gain. Almost invariably, we suffer some loss, and then later, we discover some blessing, some new blessing has come into our lives. It's a cycle. I'm sorry, I need to see my notes today. All right. So there are many examples in all of our lives where some gain was preceded by a loss. There's a funny anecdote. I told this years ago. You won't remember, I don't think. When I was a young man in my 20s, I was unusually stupid and arrogant. I was. And as a result of my stupidity and arrogance, I managed to get myself fired from my job. And, you know, I thought, oh my God, I'm fired. What am I going to do? And it felt like a great loss, being fired. Of course, what followed was really surprising because finding myself suddenly unemployed, I had the chance to consider some other alternatives. One alternative I had been thinking about is being an independent consultant instead of working as an employee. I formed a very small consulting company, and within maybe 3-4 months, I had doubled my salary. So what an interesting example of how a loss is converted into a gain. That happens so often, not just in my life, in everyone's life. A more recent example is many of you know that I've been ill for several weeks. So several weeks of my life are pretty much erased because of the illness. And now that the illness is gone, I'm reborn, I'm renewed, I'm raring to go, delighted to come back to classes, and filled with ideas and creativity. It got like bottled up over these 3 weeks. So even though illness is a problem and it's a loss of our valuable lifetimes, that loss can be followed by something which becomes a great gain. Now, how is it that we can consider this a general principle? You might think, well, what is the rule? How is it that we can say that loss is usually followed by some gain? Something happens when we suffer a loss. And that is, it gives us some time to reflect. Usually when we suffer a loss, and you can... A very common situation is loss of a loved one would be very common in our lives. When we suffer such a loss, it becomes a time of reflection. And a time of reflection is something we don't get enough of in our lives. Many of you, I know, are working so busily, your time is not 100% full. Your time is 110% full. I don't know how you can do that. But if you're busy 110% of the time, where is the time for reflection? Well, when a loss is thrust upon us, that often becomes an opportunity for reflection. And reflection can definitely lead to growth. Look at my example of being fired. I was able to reflect on my profession, what I wanted to do, and I was able to come up with a brand new plan. If I had continued working, interesting, if I continued working as an employee, I would never have been bold enough to go off on my own and to start an independent consulting company. Being fired turned out to be a great blessing. It gave me that opportunity for reflection. That's crucial. Something else that happens in a time of loss, we have to let go. Usually, we hold on to our comfortable lives. We all like comfort. Who doesn't like comfort? You know, who wants to jump out of your nice warm bed on a cold winter morning? We like that comfort and we want to hold on to that. But when we hold on to comfort in a general sense in life, what we're doing is creating a life of complacency, right? When we hold on to comfort, we stay in our comfort zone. That's a nice expression. And by staying in our comfort zone, by not going outside of our comfort zone, we create a life of complacency in which there's very little growth. There's stasis. You're stuck in that state of complacency. So loss can very frequently then give rise to this period of growth. It makes us let go, gives us time to reflect, and we observe that these kinds of losses frequently come into our lives. We understand the doctrine of karma.
we can understand that Ishvara, by the way, Shiva is Ishvara. So Ishvara, the God of the cosmos, as Lord Shiva, is the karma pala data, the giver of the fruits of our actions. You know this very well, which means the results of good deeds you've committed in past times, Lord Shiva gives you the results of those good deeds. And the results of certain harmful or adharmic deeds we've done in past times, Lord Shiva also gives us those karma palas, those results. So Lord Shiva, as Ishvara, as karma pala data, frequently is the one who brings this unwanted, undesirable papa karma pala. The results of our past bad actions are brought into our lives by Lord Shiva. And then how do we respond? Oh, why me? We're going to come back to that at the end. Why me? We often respond with resentment, with negativity, with regret. And that's unfortunate. Here's why. When, let's take, you know, loss is kind of a big thing. Let's substitute loss with problem. Problem is also a good example. So many problems are brought into our lives by Lord Shiva as karma pala data, who dispenses us to us the results of our past bad actions, and various problems arise in our lives. And those problems we often judge as being undesirable. We feel resentful. We regret the presence of problems in our lives. And that's a huge mistake, because through dealing with the problems in our lives, we grow. Imagine if you had zero, this is silly, but imagine if you lived a life in which you had no problems. As a child, everything went your way. Whenever you wanted, mom would give you. As a teenager, you got everything you wanted. As a young adult, you got everything you want. In school, without even studying, you got A's on all your exams. By the way, if you didn't study, and you got A's, how much would you have learned? You can see what we're beginning to build is the fact that it is through the problems and challenges and difficulties of our lives that we learn and grow. If we weren't challenged in life, we wouldn't try so hard. But it is the problems we face and the struggles we encounter that force us to come up to meet those challenges. You can't deny that greatness is born of struggle. It's an absolute truth. Greatness is born of struggle, not of comfort. No better example than Gandhiji. Mahatma Gandhi, he struggled like anything. He spent years in jail. He suffered failure after failure. He was confronted by so many difficulties and problems. He struggled against it. And you'll agree that it was this struggle that made him great. Mahatma means great. His greatness was born of struggle. Your greatness is born not of laying in bed under the covers, really cozy. Your greatness is born of struggle, of your effort to meet the challenges and difficulties that are brought into your life. And we can certainly understand Shiva as an aspect of Ishvara who brings those problems and struggles into our lives. Shiva forces us to grow by putting roadblocks in front of us, by putting challenges in front of us, by creating these opportunities for growth. Really speaking, every problem, every difficulty that comes into your life can be understood as an opportunity for growth. Is it not? Now, you can say, but Swamiji, it's miserable and difficult. True, no one can deny that the problems you face are miserable and difficult, but it is equally true that those problems and challenges are opportunities for growth, which means every new problem that comes into your life could be understood by you to be another opportunity for growth. When I say another opportunity for growth, a smile comes to my face because I remember a very close friend and fellow student when we were studying with Pooja Swamiji in the Pennsylvania ashram in the 1980s. A very close friend of mine was someone who was a very deep student of Advaita Vedanta, but also a woman who had an unusual number of problems and obstacles and struggles in her life. She met a lot of major, major difficulties in her life, and she had to struggle perhaps more than most of us, it seemed to me. And she developed this amazing philosophy that every problem and difficulty that she encountered, everyone was another opportunity for growth, except the way she put it was with a special American slang word, another blanking opportunity for growth. This was her exact expression. Being a Vedantin doesn't mean you lose these words. So, so she had an unusual number of obstacles. So each time an obstacle came, another one for her, it was another blanking opportunity for growth. And she grew so much. Amazing just to see how she developed as a person. This growth comes as a result of the problems and obstacles we meet, and we step up to the challenge. We meet those obstacles. We overcome those obstacles. Those problems make us strive. Those problems make us grow. So, we understand then Lord Shiva, as Karmapala Datta, keeps dropping, as it were, these problems and difficulties and obstacles in our lives. And those problems and obstacles dropped into our lives by Lord Shiva are potentially opportunities for growth, tremendous opportunities for growth. But if we look at those problems and challenges with a sense of regret and resentment, then they're not opportunities for growth. We turn those situations into opportunities for self-pity, right? Self-pity means, oh, why me? Well, why me? You've heard my response. My response is, why not me? First of all, let's respond to this why me, this self-pity. Some new problem or obstacle, unexpected, undesirable, has arisen in your life. Your response is, why me? You come to Swami Taratmananda and say, Swamiji, why me? And what does Swamiji say? Why not you? Because every single human being is subject to problems and difficulties they don't deserve because of their past karmas. You say, Swamiji, why me? I didn't deserve this. Well, think of the poor people living in Syria, every day being bombed, their children dying. Did they deserve that? They didn't deserve that. So when some bomb, as it were metaphorical, some bomb falls upon your life and you say, why me? I would suggest, why not me? Am I so different? Every other person is subject to the results of past bad karmas. They may not deserve those results in this life, but due to past karmas, it happens. So instead of why me, why not me? Now, that's my response. Somebody else has an even cleverer response. The response is, instead of why me, by the way, when you say why me, who is that addressed to? Ishvara, right? You address Ishvara, oh God, why me? Hey Bhagavan, why me? So somebody else had a very clever saying. Instead of why me, just try me. Excellent! Why me is a statement of self-pity. Oh, poor me. Just try me. Defiance. Okay, you threw this obstacle in my life. Watch. Watch my response. Watch as I summon all my resources and rise up in defiance of this obstacle placed in my life. Watch me use this situation as an opportunity for growth. Hey Bhagavan, watch me. Not why me, just try me. And see what I can do. Brilliant. excuse me. Every problem, every difficulty brought into our lives by Karmapala Datta, by Lord Shiva, by Ishvara, truly, those problems and difficulties can be opportunities for growth. It's up to us to shift our perspective and make use of those opportunities. Instead of wallowing in self-pity, we can take it as a challenge, we can rise to that challenge, we can summon our energy and resources. This is where growth takes place. So, as we conclude our program, we can pray that every time a new obstacle falls upon our life, a new bomb, nice metaphor, a new bomb falls on our lives, a new problem falls upon us, a new challenge, a new difficulty, let us pray and invoke Lord Shiva's blessings that we take those difficulties and challenges as opportunities for growth, that we rise up, summoning our energy to overcome those challenges, and in that way, every challenge we face becomes an opportunity for growth with Lord Shiva's blessings. Okay. A couple of quick announcements at the end of our program. Nice, our classes are finally resuming. My illness is over. So tomorrow, Sunday, we'll have our program for teens at 11. We'll have our satsang question and answer session at 6:15. Come and join us. I want to thank all the volunteers who helped with today's program, preparing the hall, preparing the altar, bringing food and serving the food down in the dining hall. Thank you all. In just a moment, we'll conclude with arati. After arati, you can come up to the altar There'll be a basket of flowers. You're welcome then to offer a flower. And then you can receive some tirtham. Tirtham means the milk that we offered now comes back to us as prasad. You can receive that tirtham after the arati. And then, of course, go down into the dining hall where prasad will be served. Okay, we'll conclude with our prayers. Can we turn the altar lights back up, please, someone?